Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Louise, thank you very much for that. Just to let you know, in badminton, Donegal Olympic debutante Rachel Dara for Ireland is doing very well against her Swiss opponent. It's currently 1-1 between the two of them, and we will keep an eye on that and, of course, bring you updates in our sports bulletin at 5:30. Right now, though, my next guest has been working in the maternity and paediatric department at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, which is one of the largest remaining hospitals in Gaza. There were a number of other serious mass casualty incidents at the hospital in July, and her organisation MSF is calling for more protection of this vital healthcare facility. Amy Kitmai-Lowe is a Médecins Sans Frontières medical nurse, and she joins us now from Gaza. And Amy, you're welcome to the programme this evening. As I said, I know you have been in Nasser Hospital. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you've seen in terms of what is happening there?
Hi, thank you for having me. So I've been working in Nasser Hospital since the end of June, and the whole month of July, we've just seen mass casualty incidents come in on what it seems to be like a regular basis. The hospital itself, where we work in the maternity and pediatrics department, is already full, with last week, I think it was 312% bed occupancy rate. So just children everywhere occupying all the beds, two per bed, and even on the floor or in the corridor. And then on top of that, when we have these mass casualty incidents, we need to make space for more of the casualties coming in. And usually the emergency room is the one that's supposed to receive these casualty patients. However, because they're already full as well, they kind of just spill over into our department, which is very unusual. The staff is not really trained for this. They're maternity and pediatric nurses. They're not supposed to see blast victims, gunshot wound victims, all of these kinds of cases. So, but because there's no other place for them to go, we open the doors and they come in. We have to move some of our patients to make way for some of these critical patients who are severely injured.
And is the area at the moment around Nasser Hospital under IDF attack at the moment?
The block itself, so they divided the whole strip into several blocks. So the block where Nasser Hospital is located is not under evacuation, but two blocks over is the latest evacuation order that they issued on the 22nd of July. So it became really close to the hospital, and during that evacuation we had another mass casualty incident because they evacuated the block and started to attack, and those injured came just on constant blow for about 5 hours. We were holding the mass casualty event with injured upon injured or dead bodies just coming in one after another.
I can't even imagine what that's like, or how staff there are coping with that, and how the patients there are coping with that, Amy. How does everybody manage in that situation?
It's really difficult. I mean, they've been going through this for the past 10 months. This month was particularly hard with a mass casualty event every 4 or 5 days. And imagine doing that for 10 months. So that's like, if you just take the average, that's like 40, you know, someone to live through 40 mass casualty events. I live through 2 or 3 and I'm already exhausted. So I can't imagine them. I mean, I can see them. They do their best with the adrenaline running, but you reach a limit. You know, I think a lot of them are exhausted, are tired. They just don't know what to do anymore because they're doing the best they can with what they have, but the supplies are running low. They used to have very high standards of care. And now we're just lowering the standards until it's almost the bare minimum to try to save lives. So the staff is stressed and tired. And then on top of that, I mean, they're living the war day to day. Oh, they go home and they don't even know sometimes if their home is still there, because there's no safe place in Gaza. So I've had staff tell me, you know, I'm going to go home and I hope my children are still there.
I know one of your colleagues, Dr. Javed Abdelmanim, who's an MSF medical team leader, described some of his experiences as well, and he described in particular last week walking behind a curtain in the hospital. He said there was a little girl alone dying by herself, and he said that's the outcome of a collapsed health system, a little 8-year-old girl dying alone on a trolley in the emergency room in a functioning health system. She would have been saved, he said. I don't know, have you seen many similar instances of children on their own very badly injured or dying, or families on their own?
I mean, one story was when I was also in that same mass casualty event with Javid. I was in another room, and this little girl as well, not more than 5 years old, had a chest tube in with severe burns on her body, all alone. And then family members are frantic looking for their loved ones, and finally the mother came, and when she saw her child, she just screamed, you know, like tears of joy, but also tears of fear, and like the horror of finding your child alive but in such a condition. She was pretty much hysterical, but I can imagine, you know, I mean, to finally be able to find your child but then seeing them in that condition. And other cases I've seen, you know, one woman, she had her leg fractured, and finally her mother found her. She was a woman, so probably around 20 years old, and her mother was also super relieved to find her daughter alive and well, but at the same time didn't have the heart to tell her that the rest of the family had died. So it's very traumatic for everybody involved, the staff, the people. It's just heartbreaking day after day. And so the emotional trauma that these people are suffering, and the healthcare workers, it's taken its toll, and I think they're at the breaking point right now.
And for that little girl, for example, that you've described there with the tube in her chest with burns all over her body, given the stress on healthcare in Gaza and the lack of healthcare in lots of parts of Gaza, what is her prognosis? How, I can only imagine the aftercare that she would receive in a normally functioning healthcare environment that probably won't be available to her.
Exactly. Once we find a space for her in the OT, the surgical ward, you know, to get her surgeries that she needs done to repair all the damage and injuries, after that she has to go to intensive care. But with a mass influx of injured this way, there's also just not enough beds for intensive care. So after the surgery, how do you treat them? They end up clogging up the surgical department because they can't move patients forward. In a normal functional healthcare system, she could survive, but here probably not. You know, I mean, they do the best, but all of these mass casualty events are putting a toll, and there's not enough beds, not enough space, not enough healthcare workers to treat all of them. So her prognosis after this repair, I would call it, you know, from the surgical department, prognosis is not great. On top of that, all the surgical site infections that she may acquire during the surgery, because there's a lack of material, lack of antiseptic, the conditions in which they're doing the surgery aren't optimal. So it puts her at a lot of risk of death.
What then about pain medication for that little girl and for so many others that you've seen?
We're running out of that as well. Today, the doctor told me there was not enough fentanyl and midazolam for the patients on ventilator. So they're struggling with their ventilator because they can feel the pain of the ventilator helping them breathe. So we're running out of those medications as well. When we were doing the mass casualty incident, a lot of the patients needed morphine, but there wasn't enough. So all they got was diclofenac, which, just to give you an idea, this is the kind of medication you take when you have like a renal stone or you know, a urine infection that's burning when you pee. It's not strong enough for any of the burns or any of the broken open traumas, broken bones. It's definitely not enough.
And what then about disease, Amy? Because we've seen lots of reports about potential polio outbreak in Gaza. I don't know, have you seen any evidence of that, or what other problems are you seeing when it comes to disease?
Water and sanitation conditions in the whole strip is deplorable. It's just, you can't imagine the piles of garbage and sewage that is just accumulating along the streets, and that just breeds infection. We have a hepatitis A outbreak since I was here back in February. It hasn't gotten better. Now we're seeing meningitis as well. In normal functioning hospitals, you would isolate these patients, but because we're over capacity, we can't have proper isolation measures. And if they go home, you know, to their crowded tents, they could probably spread it to their family and neighbors as well. So the sanitation conditions are just horrible. And on top of that, because the supply is so erratic, right now we're actually facing a shortage of soap, like just pure liquid soap that you would put in your own bathroom. And we don't have enough of that on the strip. So even the surgeon was asking me, I think it was yesterday, we have a bit of alcohol hand sanitizer that we're using. We're rationing that out as well. And she's like, can I please get some soap? That's what I need to wash my hands and scrub in properly. And we ration it off and they get half a bottle a day. And once that's done, they have to use chlorine if they can find some or something to help scrub in before they go into the surgery.
What about supplies of blood? Because I can imagine that must be very necessary at the moment. But given all the other shortages mm-hmm. you've described, is that an issue also?
It's a huge issue. Nasser Hospital is the only blood bank in the Strip. So that's why it's also a critical infrastructure to protect, because if Nasser ceases to function, there is no blood bank for the whole Strip. There are a few field hospitals that do orthopedic trauma surgeries on what they call it, field hospital. It's a tent, and they rely on Nasser Hospital to do the blood collection, and then they bring it over to the field hospitals. And there's also just not a lot of blood products left. We asked last week, we did a blood drive. So we asked the people in and around the hospital, you know, to donate blood, and they're very willing because they know that this is going to help other people, but they're also in not the best health condition. So they're either turned away because they have anemia or because they're malnourished. So they're not fit to donate blood, and there's just not enough blood supply. Mm. And on top of that, there's also not enough supply to keep the blood. So I was at the lab the other day and she told me I don't have no more blood bags, you know, to store the blood once I collect it. So the whole supply chain issue is affecting every aspect of healthcare.
Can I just ask you finally then, Amy, in terms of the people that you've seen and the trauma that they've gone through, and I know you and your colleagues, your primary focus at the moment is just helping people survive, but you've been there now for 2 months. How are people coping emotionally, the people that you've met and the people that you've seen?
I mean, our staff are quite strong and they're quite resilient, but I know that they're also really tired. I mean, I think going to work some days is great for them because they can kind of pretend they still have a normal life. They're at work, they're doing their nursing job, so they can forget about their tent and their children who have to go run for water. But then sometimes they just think about, you know, 11 months ago when they had a house, you know, they had electricity, they had running water. You know, one of my staff said, I just want to go home. You know, I want this war to end because I'm tired. And so they're suffering a lot. We try to provide mental health care to our team as well, but the need is so huge. And even if we do a few sessions, you know, it's going to take a long time to recover from all the trauma that they've experienced over these last 10 months and who knows how much longer.
Amy Kidd-Milo, Médecins Sans Frontières medical nurse, thank you very much for joining us from Gaza this evening.